Hello, I'm Carolyn Oakley and welcome to the Live Now Play Later podcast. On the podcast, we speak to new writers, artists, producers and industry people about their music, songwriting and how they navigate their careers in music in the 2020s. I hope through the podcast to bring attention to artists, producers, bands and songwriters that are standing out and building a name for themselves in the UK music scene. And through these conversations, introduce you to new songwriters and music that I hope you will love just as much as we do. These are stories of real inspiring people that are creating and releasing some amazing music. And despite setbacks and complications on both personal and global levels that releasing music in the 2020s seems to bring, they keep going and are achieving some great successes. This week's episode, I speak to Harry Lloyd, who's the creative force behind Waiting for Smith. Originally from London, Harry is currently living in Amsterdam. He's in the process of releasing a new EP titled Trying Not to Try and promoting a fourth single from the EP called Tidal Wave. Harry is also preparing for a really special EP launch show with his full band that is taking place at the Waiting Rooms in London on the 24th of November. I love this interview and found Harry's perspective on life uplifting and really inspiring. He's been through some very challenging experiences, including a bad skiing accident that left him with a broken back and stuck in bed for a year recovering. Rather than giving up, he saw it as a turning point in his life to take being a songwriter seriously and use recovery time to write and learn new skills. Through his music, he hopes to share his view on life and aims to create music that has a positive energy and message to hopefully help and inspire others. This is the Live Now Play Later podcast, and I would like to introduce you to Waiting for Smith.
I blame love because it makes me blind. You blame us every time you're tired. I'm angry, but I love you. Dancing through the dead of night, we got too high on the lust for life. Oh, you're angry, but I love you. Summon on now, notice, summon on now, notice. When it's just you and me, summon on now, notice, summon on now, notice. You're saving me in a sky like dawn.
Hello, Harry Lloyd. Welcome to the Live Now Play Later podcast.
Hello, how are you doing? Good evening.
Not bad. Not bad at all. Lovely to meet you.
Lovely to meet you too.
Can I just clarify, is it Waiting for Smith the band name, or are you a solo artist?
Yes, so Smith was the first drummer who never turned up. So yeah, I'm a solo artist, but I tried to start a band, but I didn't really work, so I just went alone. And then I kind of meet people along the way. When I play live, I tend to sort of have about 7 people with me, which is really fun.
Right.
So, yeah.
Amazing. So you're a solo artist, and so your artist name is Waiting for Smith. If for people listening, if they want to find you on Spotify and all the other platforms. So you're a singer, songwriter, and what style of music is it, would you describe, that you create?
I always find this question really hard, but I always kind of put it in probably the indie pop thing. But the underlying thing is that I want to give a little bit of hope. So that's my main driver for the music, is to spread a bit of joy, give a bit of hope, make people feel something. And if that's in like an indie pop thing, or if that's electronic, or that maybe one day goes more ballad, then that's also cool. So that's my general kind of box.
Yeah, just exploring where you're going and adapting as you see fit.
Exactly.
Okay, so it's lovely to meet you, and thank you so much for joining me the podcast and letting me interview you today. As I do in all the podcast interviews that I do, depending on when people are listening to it, I always find it's really useful to do a time and place, just so that people know where we are, what month we're in, what year we're in, and whereabouts you are on your journey. So
It's the very beginning of November 2022. I'm talking to you over the internet. I'm based in Leeds. And whereabouts are you, Harry?
I'm in Amsterdam.
Amsterdam.
So, yeah, I moved to like 2 years ago. I originally came for the bicycles and the freedom. I stayed for the joy. There's a real thing with Amsterdam. They just, I don't know, like people, I remember when I first came over and I got talking to one of the guys driving the bus and he was like the happiest bus driver I've ever met. I was like, wait, this is great. I'm going to stay in this place. They got something going on.
I need to go to Amsterdam now. You sold it to me. but you're based in Amsterdam, but you're from UK. So you're originally from London, is that right?
Yeah, originally from London, then moved out, kind of grew up almost more in Oxford, actually. But I kind of go back to London a lot to visit family and friends and still got my label there. So, yeah, I still have a connection.
And so you've got labels, so you're assigned artists.
Yes, so I'm with AWOL, which is paradoxically a label, but it actually stands for Artists Without a Label. So
okay.
Kind of makes, in some way it makes no sense, but I like to think of it as basically what it is, a distribution deal. So they help me out with getting the music, spreading it, playlisting and sort of putting it together, which is really useful.
Thanks. Okay, cool. I have heard of AWOL. The point of the podcast is, as I said just before we started, so the purpose of the podcast is for people to hear your story. And I was reading the information about you beforehand, and you have a really, really interesting story, which we would like to go into now. So have you always done music, or have you not done music? And music is a difficult thing to actually do as a career. So for you, why have you chosen music? Why is it something that you decided to do as a career? And how did you get there?
I always loved music. Like ever since, who doesn't like music? What a ridiculous thing to say. You have to have a heart of stone not to like any music in the world. I feel like it's sort of part of life. But I always remember being really enthusiastic about music and different sounds, even from like the age of 4 or 5, like, and rhythm. Like I was always drumming on things. I'm quite a high energy person. I sound quite calm and together right now, but I would say I'm probably, when I'm bouncing around, I'm quite ADHD almost. So I was always tapping on things. And about age 10, I started my first band as a drummer and the singer. And then, you let it go and then it comes back to you. And I started playing the piano about 14, 15, because I felt like the drums didn't give me the melody that I was looking for. You know, I wanted to hear some music along with the rhythm. And then I left it for a while, became a ski instructor for a few years. And it was only when I had an accident and broke my back that I kind of came full circle back to it again. No pun intended with the back. And then I had the accident, and then it was like, it was a really, really strange thing, because I have told this story before, but I still find it weird that it actually happened, because the first thought I had was, oh fuck, I broke my back. And the second thought was, I can do music. So it was this strange epiphany moment for me where I thought, okay, this is what maybe I'm meant to be doing with my life, or at least for the foreseeable future. So,
you decided to be a ski instructor for a bit though. So what made you do that? Was that like thinking you should explore something differently? Had you fallen out with music a little bit before that? Or
it was like it was kind of my university, really. Yeah, I left school and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I remember like writing this list, like a sort of big mind map being like, okay, I'm just going to put down everything that I'm interested in. And it was quite a big list. It was like, there was photography and there was acting and there was language. And then I was like, okay, of all these things, what can I actually do? And the only thing I was quite considerably good at was a sport to a level and language. So I was like, well, I could go study language, or I could just hit the streets and just like take off to France and learn it just speaking to people. So I thought, right, I'll get a job in Paris. And I got a job like flyering for comedy shows. So I did like Eddie Izzard's French comedy show, which was really fun.
That's nice.
Yeah, it was awesome. And so, you know, you work for this PR firm and you're flyering and you're also like helping them out with stuff and basically like making coffee, glorified coffee boy. And then after that, my French kind of got a bit better and I was like, right, I feel confident enough to go to the Alps. So I went to the Alps and yeah, over a year and a half, I trained and qualified as a ski instructor because skiing was something I could already do to a level. I mean, we only go like as a family, as like a thing once a year, maybe even once every 2 years, but sometimes you just have natural ability for some things. So I was like, okay, well, I could combine language and I could combine doing sport and get paid for it and just explore the world. And the ski instructing company, ESF, they took me to, they sent me to Russia as well to learn Russian.
Wow.
So it was awesome. So it was like this, it was a paid university basically.
Yeah.
Where a lot of my friends were like gathering debt and smoking joints. And I was like, I'm getting paid and learning some Russian, baby. It also was a great opportunity for me to harness my skills as a songwriter because I had a little keyboard next to my bed and I'd wake up most mornings before going out and hitting the slopes to teach.
Right.
And try and write a song. So yeah, over those couple of years in the Alps, I wrote hundreds and hundreds of songs. And, yeah.
Is it almost like through that process that I know obviously you didn't have an accident. Was it a case of the sports side, the skiing side was not an option then? So you said that was like, right, I'm going to take songwriting and music seriously now. Or was it actually a realization that you wanted to do music above all else?
Yeah, I think it was, the latter. But it was also a full stop in like, you sometimes have moments in life where you're going down something and you might be happy, but you're like, is there something more?
Yeah.
Am I too comfortable? You know, I always think there was this thing I saw the other day that says comfort is the worst addiction to have. I thought it was really interesting because, you know, a lot of my favorite people and people that I've been inspired by, they always talk about that. You should always be slightly with your feet dangling. Like Bowie said that. He's always like, always with your feet slightly out of the water. And I like that. I kind of check in with myself and be like, am I too comfortable? You know, am I ordering a takeout too much? Should I be cooking something? Should I be doing more exercise? Are my songs courageous enough? Am I singing to a level that I think I'm giving it everything? Like if I died tomorrow, would I have given it everything I had? Or am I holding back a little bit because I'm a bit scared to show exactly who I am? Like, and I think that philosophy and stuff has always stayed with me. And it was then reinforced when I had my accident where I went, okay, this is my chance. Let's do this. You know, there's no escaping. I can't procrastinate. I can't pretend that I'm going to just like twiddle my thumbs and be like, oh no, recording's too difficult. Like, I don't know if I want to record something or I don't want to set up my microphone today or I can't be bothered to write a song. I'm just going to hit the bar instead. And then I had this year in bed. And so I was like, I was kind of stuck looking at myself being like, well, there's no excuses now. There's no way you can go. You're not going to leave your bed for a while. You've got to make your back better. So you might as well like write and read and absorb and think and formulate the plan that you've always wanted to do.
Did you have any songwriting training or are you mostly self-taught then?
Mainly self-taught. I don't know if you can, I mean, people would disagree if you could teach songwriting. I don't know if you can teach. I think you can teach the structures. I think you can teach like tricks, but then I think the songs kind of find you in some way. They're a weird one. So I feel like with songwriting, you can, of course, you have the masters and you see them at work. I've been on songwriting retreats and in sessions where you just see like, okay, this guy's written like, oh, this guy has written 5, 10, 20,000 songs. And you can just see like, whoa, okay, this is how you shape and this is craft. But there's this other part of it, which is sort of, as you know, as a songwriter, it's sort of magic. It's kind of like, I mean, even saying that, I get goosebumps on my neck because it just kind of, the song sort of arrives and then you sort of fish it down. If it feels like it sort of floats above your head.
Yeah.
It sounds far out, but it feels like it kind of is floating in the ether and almost like a fisherman. You're like, you're just dragging it down from the sky kind of thing. And lots of people have talked about this. Noel Gallagher talks about it. Bono. They all talk about this kind of Paul McCartney. They all talk about this sense of Katie Miller as well. I think they all talk about the sense of it being there and them sort of just arriving and the song sort of finding them. Or so that's how I kind of like to think of it. And I think, yeah, if you're lucky and you're in the right place at the right time, or you experience that thing that the song needs to express, then it finds you. And some people would say, oh, that's kind of crazy. No, that's really far out. But if you've written a song and you feel like it's a song that makes people feel, you know what I'm talking about.
I think they say about flow state. I don't know if you've heard of flow state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
So that's almost like what you're describing there. And a lot of creatives, a lot of, I think, storytellers talk about this as well. And sometimes it feels like you can hear it, but you can't quite hear it. And it's, so you're like, yeah, you say fishing for it. And it's like, you can suggest words for things. And it's like, no, that doesn't feel right. That doesn't feel right, until it does feel right. And it's like, yeah, that's it. It's very strange.
And what is that? What is it? Like, how do you know that it's right? That's what's so weird, but you know.
Yeah. It's that gut feeling.
You feel it.
Yeah, it is very strange. But I think that's the love of it, though. Part of the love for me about it is that feeling, because it just, when you do guess it, it's like, what was that? Quite special.
Yeah. Yeah, it's magic. It's magic.
It's magic. It's addictive as well.
definitely. It definitely is. Because it's therapy as well. It's free therapy, basically. I'd advise like just trying to write a song almost before we're going to see anyone to talk about things. It's so helpful. Songs have helped me so much through my life with my mental health and dealing with loss and grief and anger and so much stuff. It's emotional therapy. Yeah.
You said you've always been able to find these songs in you, and obviously you've written a lot of songs. You said when you were laid up in bed with a bad back, you wrote hundreds of songs. So for you, like, how do you write songs? Is it melody first? Do you write like lyric ideas down? And you said about therapy as well. Is it, do you go through things and then like almost journal it and then go, right, at some point I want to write about this? How is it? Everybody does it differently. So for you,
totally,
what is your process?
It really depends on the day, but the most common process I have is I get like a feeling that I need to express something. It's kind of like, I don't know, like you might be excited for Christmas Day or something. You're like, I need to go downstairs and look at some presents. Like, is that feeling? It's like, I gotta get to an instrument like now. Or if you can't, then you just do it vocally. And that's what normally happens for me, is I get to a piano, I get to my guitar, or sometimes even just voice note something, but mainly with an instrument. And then I sit down and I just start playing whatever comes to mind. I don't judge it. I don't think about what it is. I'm just there. And normally, if I feel like it's something worth keeping, it comes quick. And the melody comes, like I start with a few chords. The melody then comes and almost I'll start singing something straight away that makes kind of sense, but it won't make 100% sense. Like 80%. And then I kind of sit back from it. And if I've done a voice note or something, I might listen and go like, okay, am I feeling anything from this? And if I feel something special and I feel like this feels like it's been here already, if I get that feeling, then I go like, okay, I'm going to work on it. And I will, then I'll sit down and I'll look at the lyrics. And I, rather than kind of saying like, okay, I'm going to be clever, or I want to say something here, I just try and look at what the song's saying to me. Because it's normally like a process, like I talked about therapy. It's kind of like, oh, okay, the song, oh, I'm processing the anger I felt 2 weeks ago. Or I'm processing the loss of my friend or whatever. I'm processing falling in love, you know, these things. And so, yeah, that's my main process. I feel lucky that the melody and lyrics kind of come together. And then I sort of puzzle after that. But of course, on some days, it might just be a few words. And then I'll try and find the melody for it.
Yeah.
But most often, it kind of comes together.
I've heard the people that die, they seem to go round to come for the sky. So I'm not racing to the top of that pile. And I found the strangers, they bleed, they open up to the open sea. There is so much pain in all of their grief. So run, run till the open sea. He'll take you, I'll take me. So run, run till the open sea. Till we find, until we find peace.
I love that process of how you write as well. And it is very much therapy as well. And also I feel like because it's our therapy, almost the listeners, I know music, listening to other people's music is therapy for me also. But when it comes from that place, I feel like other people also connect to it for their own therapy. And to me, that's part of the gift of being a songwriter, is that it's such a great thing to do for people. And the world having music in that, because in the world, because it does help so many people. And I think it's one of those things that is appreciated, but not necessarily appreciated about the craft that the songwriter goes through. It's sort of almost taken for granted, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, for me, that's the ultimate goal, is to help people with music, because I think exactly what you said, like, yeah, you help yourself first. You feel your own process, and then you hope that by doing that, it gives someone else the courage or gives someone else the idea like, oh yeah, okay, cool. It's okay to love myself, or like, oh, this feels nice. This falling in love thing, or whatever it is. I'm, you know, I can dance, or I don't know, anything that you're trying to convey. Yeah. It's the best. If you get a message, through and it says like, oh yeah, you know, I woke up, I was feeling so depressed for the last 3 weeks or something, and woke up to your song every morning and now I'm feeling better, or I lost someone and through that process I've been listening to this song that you did and it's really helped, then you're like, that's incredible. Not incredible that people suffer and they go through pain, but that you can help with it in some small way. It feels like, oh, okay, I feel like I'm of service. I'm helping. That feels good.
Yeah.
Feels right.
And Greg, I just want to go back to your story as well. So after you had your accident, you decided, what year was that then? When was it that you had that accident?
It's nearly 7 years ago or something.
Right, okay.
Crazy.
Had you released any music at that point? Or
No, I hadn't. I started after that.
Right.
Yeah, I'd finished like a record when I was really small. Like when I was 10, I did my first record with my band. We got some studio time because one of the guys' mums in the band was an A&R. So she was like, oh yeah, I'll get you some free studio time. And Yeah, so we found ourselves in the studio recording this song, and it was a great song. The lyrics are really shit. Song's really good though. I still think, like, I wonder who else could use that. Where could I put that song? Still, I'm really proud of the melody. The lyrics definitely need a lot of work, but yeah.
You had like some minimal experience, but then obviously you found yourself, you had this epiphany, you decided this is actually something I actually want to pursue now. So where did you go next then in terms of seeing where that could go then? Obviously, you had to recover from your injury. Were you doing things whilst you were injured towards that goal, or what happened next?
After that, it was nearly a year. It was nearly a year mostly in bed. And I was doing physio 4 to 5 times a day. Halfway through that process, I started mixing in yoga with it. I was meditating a lot to try and just like the pain and stuff. And I was also being given diazepam, like Valium, 5 a day. So I was pretty high for like a whole year, which was funny because I was reading a lot and exposing myself to a lot of film and music. And so it was strange. Time was really weird. It kind of moved quick and then went really slow, as probably a lot of people are experiencing now. After what's happened over the last 2 years, it has done something weird to time.
Yes, it has.
Yeah. And that was the process. And then when I kind of had enough strength after 9 months or something, nearly a year, I decided my guitar teacher had told me about this studio that opened up down the road because I learned guitar in bed. So I had guitar lessons once a week in bed. He would come to my bed, teach me guitar. Because I could play piano already. So I was like, I'll learn a new instrument, which will really help me with my writing. And so Darren is great, amazing guy, like double denim, old rocker, like hero of the town. We got on so well. He was such a legend. I think he was actually, I think he'd had a thing actually with the district nurse. Because
allegedly
when she was allegedly, but it was funny. One moment she walked in, I don't know if Darren will ever listen to this, but if he does, it doesn't matter. You're a legend, Darren. But the district nurse was like dressing my back because I had this big operation. I had to have these rods put into the spine, and so she's dressing the wound and stuff, and Darren turns up a bit early for the guitar lesson. He's like, oh, Sally. She was like, Darren. I was like, this is brilliant. This is a brilliant place to meet. I don't know how long they hadn't seen each other for, but there was definitely romance in the air. It was beautiful to witness.
I love the fact that you've gone through this like huge ordeal, but you actually turned it into such a positive experience. I mean, it must have been really, really difficult for you. But I love how you've seen the positives in it. Even just like, you know, bringing somebody in to teach you something and teach you to play the guitar. That's a really great attitude to have, to keep working towards, your goals and dreams and all that sort of stuff.
I felt so hungry, I guess. I felt when it happened, I had this, definitely something changed because I also, with the accident, I actually, they don't really know what happened. They still don't really know, but I actually died for 5 minutes and then I came back to life. So during the operation, and there was something really weird about that because some people say, well, do you remember anything? Did you see the light? That kind of stuff. And I was like, no, I didn't. But I did get a sense that when I came back after the operation, I had this real sense of humor for life. Like, I've always found life quite funny. It's a strange thing that we're doing here and that we're all alive and like we're walking along the street. How are you? How are you? Yeah, I'm fine. Well, probably not fine because I'm living my life. So it's really up and down. Some days are really hard. And so we're all kind of like pretending in some way, but I kind of came back with this real sense of like, oh, whoa, maybe life is a big joke. Like maybe it's this big practical joke that like half of it's not funny and the other half is. I don't know. And so that kind of stuck with me as well. So I think that really helped in my recovery to start the mindset off in a positive way of like, this is happening for a reason. There's something good that will come of this. You can make this into something good by choosing to make it good. And yeah, it's a time for learning. It's like, it's more study. It's more time to absorb and just time to be. Like, we don't have enough time to be sometimes. I think that's really important to have that. So, yeah.
So this is like, oh, what did you say? 2017,
did you say? It was. Yes, it was 2015, I think.
It's 2015. You had recommendations to go to a studio down the road.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you had a bunch of songs as well. So obviously, once you'd learned the guitar, you already could play the piano. What was next then for you? Was it like, right, okay, I'm going to take these songs that I've written and get them recorded? And did you obviously have some experience when you were much younger? But that must have been quite a new thing. Did you have anybody to talk to about what to do next? Or how did you find the next steps to then start putting your songs into recorded songs and then releasing them?
Yeah, it's a great question because it's kind of like, yeah, how was the practical thing of it? And I guess that was that I went to the studio and quite serendipitously met a guy who just believed in me like straight away. And he had just built his own studio and he had built it off the back of, with his partner, off the back of touring with like big live touring acts, like doing massive US tours and stuff. So he was an amazing live sound engineer and he'd done like stadium gigs and huge stuff. And I just came in and said, hey, you know, I'm a songwriter and I don't even know if I said anything about my situation. And I was like, the first conversation we had was like, I've got loads of songs. And I think his first thought was probably not very good songs. I would imagine that's probably what most people think. If you have a lot of songs, you're probably like, yeah, well, there's probably one, two good ones. And then I remember I played a bunch to him and he was like, wait, what's going on? I like this. And then we just were like, straight away, let's do six tracks. And I paid for the studio time and I played these six songs. They were actually mainly all on piano, I think. And the first one, I think really, really like moved him and his girlfriend. And they kind of came out when I came out of this take, which was pretty much live. They were like both quite teary eyed and they were like, this is something. And I'm like, whoa, this is great because I've always wanted someone to believe in me like this. And that's what you need. You need like a kind of champion. You need just one person in the right place in the right time who thinks like you can do it. And so it was him. It was this guy, Will. And at the same time, my dad was always saying to me, like, you should be a songwriter. You should do that. You should do that. Because he heard me write songs when I was a kid. And he's like, you've got something. I'm not saying this just as your dad. These are really good songs, you know? So Will and my dad were really the first people to be like, you should do this. So Will was the studio and my dad became my manager. And then, yeah, I went from there basically.
Who are you listening to, like, music-wise, then? Were you influenced by other writers, other songs, other musicians at the time?
I think I was listening to a lot of, like piano classic songwriters, like Randy Newman and like Billy Joel and stuff. And I was then listening for lyrics to a lot of Leonard Cohen, a lot of Bob Dylan, those kind of guys. A lot of the 70s stuff, like the Eagles. And not really like listening to a lot of contemporary stuff. And I think it was weird when I listened to those songs, I think like, oh, they're almost from that time, but it needed like something, it needed like a contemporary twist or something to change it. And it was when after I had done those songs with Will, I left and I met a producer called Tom Fuller in Tower Yard Studios. And he kind of like looked at the thing and he was like, okay, I see what you're doing here and I really like it, but like you need to have your sound, you need to find your sound. And I took this one song to him, which sounded like a sort of indie driving 70s song, which would actually work really well now in loads of the playlists and lots of things that people are doing now. But at that time, there wasn't so much of that going on. And he was like, let's go more pop with it. And so we took Trade It In. And that was like really, yeah, guys in a room with a guitar and there's like straight down the line kind of beat. And we turned it into something indie pop and experimented with sound and mucked around. And that was a big eye opener for me because I went from like recording a song live, being in the room and being like, okay, let's make it sound great, to be like, okay, let's make a record. And there's no limitation. Like you can do anything you want. There's no boxes. There's no, you have to get this in two takes. There's just, let's make this as good as we can. And that was really exciting because I remember my sound overnight was like, whoa, this is different. And then that opened the door for me to suddenly receive calls from like a radio plugger and a guy in America called Sat Bizzler, who was really integral to breaking like Coldplay and Adele and Lorde and all of these massive artists in the States. And he just called me out of the blue one day because my radio plugger sent him the track. And he was really complimentary and said, look, everyone in my family likes it and that doesn't ever happen. So my 15-year-old daughter likes it. My son likes it, who likes nothing I like. I like it and my wife likes it. So you're onto something. Like, let's talk. And then, yeah, things went kind of from there.
That's an amazing story though, because to, you know, going from like putting these songs together and recording them to then obviously putting them out there and having that sort of response, that's a really, really positive, I guess, first experience. I mean,
yeah.
Were there people around you that were recommending like radio pluggers for you to contact, or were you just talking to people? How did you like, I guess, meet the right people? Because particularly today, maybe it was a slightly different time back then, because particularly today, a lot of independent artists get inundated with, you know, buy this promo and all this sort of stuff, you know, it's everywhere. But like, you know, how was it for you? Was it recommendations that you found people, or?
It was a mixture. I think the song I did just before that set me up really well with some PR people. And it's, so the song before that was called Monkeys in My Head, which I did with Will, which was like the first proper single I did, the first proper produced single. And we went nearly mad producing it because we are both major perfectionists. So we're trying to make the perfect record. It took, I think we did 80 mixes or something, completely mad. And like, I listen back to it and I think, oh, it's really nice. But I'm, you know, you don't think like that takes 80 mixes to do. But that was something I really let go of, was perfectionism and really realizing like, okay, this is as good as this can be for this point. And that doesn't matter. And if it makes you feel something, that's great. And I remember a PR firm, I actually don't know. Oh, it was through another artist called Starling, Harriet Starling, any new artists who are looking for mentorship or actors. She's now got an amazing business, basically helping and mentoring people. But she had discovered one of my videos, a Christmas song that I had done with Will as well. And she saw some potential in it. And I think she was the one that connected me to the PR firm and Tom Fuller. So at the same time, one track I was kind of getting PR, and then the new track, I was meeting a whole kind of world of writers and just what it's like to be in like a studio in London with people in the cafe and being like, oh yeah, that guy's like got a hit or what, that kind of thing. And so you're not then that far away from like starting to meet people and I like to talk to people as well. And so I'm just open to talk and have conversations. And if that goes somewhere, that's really cool. If not, then it's also just nice to have a chat. And I think the radio plugger that connected me to the guy in the US, I think my dad might have found him. He was doing some stuff with Radio 2 and he had found him and had a mutual friend or something like that. It really was like family, almost family run, like if someone would start up a bakery or something. We were like, let's go into the music business. Most crazy world. Let's do that. Nothing's impossible.
I love that you have this support from your family, though, because not everybody does have support from their families. So what you said there about, you know, having people around you, even if it's just one person that says, yeah, keep on going, because sometimes it does feel like music, working in music is such a ridiculous thing to do. And it is, you know, has very extreme highs and very extreme lows as well. But then having somebody there to say, keep going, or you should do this, is very reassuring, and can help you get over those sort of down moments. So having your family support you is a massive thing. I mean, were they connected to music themselves, or did you have anybody else in your family who were like musicians and artists or anything like that?
No, it was kind of new. I mean, my dad had actually written a song before, but he's more from in TV. He's more in the TV world, and he started kind of in advertising and stuff like that. And he's in the comedy world. So he had written more songs, but generally, I mean, there had been serious songs and stuff, but he had almost gone down the comedy song route, or had more in that way, which is a totally different world. And my mum was in publishing, like books. So they did understand business. And my dad really understands marketing. And so that was really helpful to have that input, like what ideas will work, what ideas would stick. And then I think, just having the belief is like you say, it's so important. And I think I saw when I was a kid, I saw that it was possible. And people, of course, other people outside the thing tell you it's impossible, and they laugh at you if you say, I'm going to be a songwriter. And they think, good luck, man. Like, you'll never make any money and you'll be sleeping on your parents' couch for the rest of your life. And it was a bit like, okay, well, I'm going to give it a shot because I don't know if I'm going to die tomorrow. So why the hell wouldn't I try? And so all those people didn't really get to me, because I kind of knew there was an underlying belief system where I had seen people around my dad as well, who had made it, who had literally come from nothing in the comedy world and started like playing to like two people in a pub, and now were like selling tickets and stuff. And so, yeah, I think just even seeing that, even just having one person in your town or something that you go like, oh, they made it, or they're doing what they love. Then you kind of go like, okay, it's possible. Now, how am I going to make it possible?
I love that. That's very true as well. I want to just fast forward a little bit. So
sure.
To where you are now, you're currently releasing a new EP, and you've had a number of singles that are from that EP. Going from where you were, you know, putting out your initial set of music to the music that you're creating now and your latest EP, what is it for you that you want to express in your music? And what is it, you know, your story, how has that influenced what you're creating now?
I think, I think the underlying thing is, like, even if I write a sad song, I always want there to be a little bit of hope in there. Like they'll normally by the middle eight, it gets hopeful, because I'm like, yeah, but there's always a silver lining. There has to be, because otherwise, why would we get out of bed in the morning? We need that. I think we need that feeling of like, it's possible and it's okay. And I like to convey that. And in the new EP, the whole theme is, the EP is called Trying Not to Try. And the idea of that is it's the balance of asking for what you want, but also letting go of the idea that you might have it. And it sounds kind of strange and like a bit of a paradox, but I've noticed in my life that when I try too hard at something, I kind of miss the point. Like, I don't know if you've ever had that thing where, I don't know, you ask someone out, or I don't know, you try a bit too hard to be a bit too light and chipper or something. And then you kind of feel like you're not you. And I kind of felt that with music. I was like, there's something in there that I want to convey of the idea of this. You have to get up and seek it and do the work. But at the same time, you have to let go, and you have to be open to the idea that something might be trying to find you. You don't necessarily know what's best for you all the time. So the EP themes around the kind of push and pull of that idea and struggles with mental health over the last couple of years. And I want to tell people it's okay to struggle with those things and try and convey ideas of ways that you can help those things. Yeah, because the last couple of years for me has been roller coaster mentally, which I didn't expect, because I thought coming from being in bed for a year, I would be like, okay, cool, I've done this before, let's go round two. And then something changed and I was like, okay, I'm going to have to go figure some stuff out and unearth some stuff that I didn't know was really there. So mental health really is the main theme of the EP. And that comes with relationships, with love, with facing yourself, with finding, being okay with just being, and ups and downs, and ways that maybe you can help those things. So I guess throughout the EP, throughout the lyrics, whether the songs are about love or they're about maybe a struggle with depression, the lyrics have ideas and thoughts that have helped me along the way to deal with those things. And I hope that's the goal for it, is that if it's helped me, then it's going to help someone else.
Yeah. You talked about, and we can't avoid it, obviously the pandemic, and it's a lot of the podcast interviews, we started the podcast at the end of 2020, and everybody's story obviously has to cover that impact on them and how it almost has influenced their journey to in different ways. And you've touched on it a little bit there, I believe. So you said that over the last few years, obviously the difficulty that you faced and the ups and downs that you've faced. So just before, obviously, 2020, you were obviously building this this career for you. You're creating music, you're meeting lots of people, and you've released some amazing songs from like 2017, 18, 19. Like if you have a look in your back catalogue, you can see all these great songs that you were creating. And then obviously 2020, how did that impact you personally? How was that? So obviously you said you had a year in bed from an accident, and then and that was you were having to pause and reflect on your music, and then obviously you were hit with another almost similar, not the same, but again that another pause in life that we all had to experience through the lockdowns and everything. So how was it for you in terms of your music career and where you were at? How did it impact you and how did you deal with things?
It was a strange one, because I think I, like a lot of people, decided to take a break, or they decided to go like, okay, I got this time and so I'm going to learn how to make bread, something like that. Or some people are just figuring out, fuck, how am I going to make my money? Like, what am I going to do? Mixture of things. And for me, I just thought like, and also with my girlfriend, who now at this point is my manager instead of my dad, major family unit. A lot of belief. I couldn't do without them, honestly. And so we just decided like, okay, well, everyone's slowing down. They're going to be consuming more things. Let's do more. Let's do more. And I can't really play with a band anymore. So let's do online. Let's play Instagram lives. Let's do online festivals in the US. And let's connect to new markets we hadn't before. We ended up connecting to Germany and weirdly India. I got picked up by A&R out there, connected through the guy who I'd met a long time ago, this guy Sat, who had heard Trade It In. And he connected me to him. And suddenly within a few months of the campaign, I had a sort of mini hit in India. And so then I started getting fans from India. They listen all on different platforms. So a lot of the stuff you can't see apart from underneath the YouTube, under one video, Lines of Love, you just see loads of comments from people from India and Bangladesh. And it was really surreal, because I started doing these radio shows. And I was like doing cooking programs and stuff. And like this is what I'm cooking today and stuff. And have you listened to my song? It was really weird, but really, really cool. And so we were constantly putting out stuff, and I was honing the skill of just what it's like to perform live And that thing of like just in a digital sense rather than a live audience and being comfortable with that. But at the same time, I was going through major ups and downs because as I delved deeper into my songwriting, I found that there were things that I needed to face and things that I had never fully been like, okay, this is now time to clean out, as most people did. They cleaned out their house, you know, they chucked away the old stuff. And I did that too in a physical way, but I also did it in a mental way. And that sometimes can be really painful because you don't want to clean it out. You want to just be like, it's okay. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. It's not there. And then you face it head on. You're like, oh my God, it's there. Jesus Christ. This is intense. But I do think you have to feel those things. You have to experience them. And that's why I'm interested in things like CBT, like cognitive behavioral therapies, where you can literally rewire experiences. So you change the neural pathways in your mind to ignite differently when they think about those experiences. And stuff like that has helped me so much, and songwriting and all sorts of things. I tried everything. I went down the healing route. I saw shamans. I dipped my toe into psychedelics. Everything. I was like, how can we fix these things? How can we just get back to like good solid base zero? And so I was really fascinated. So alongside working really hard at the music and doing a lot of thing, I was delving in and kind of experimenting of like, what's the best version of me? Like, how can I kind of let go of the things I don't need? And that's where I think the EP really started to form, this trying not to try concept of like, how do I get into that? What you were talking about, the flow. How do I get into that flow? My own sense of self, and just be like, cool, this is great. I'm happy with this. And so that's what I was really searching for. And through writing the EP and through that period, I found it. And I feel amazing. I feel so happy. I feel so light. Of course, I get days where I get down. Everyone does. That's life. But there's a genuine sense of gratitude and a sense of like, whoa, I got another day on this planet. What am I going to do? Who am I going to talk to? What could I do that's different? And so I'm really, really grateful for this time, although I know it's been really hard for a lot of people.
People said that as well, though, didn't they? I mean, like, we had to, it was very, very true. It's like, when you're just faced with nothing, you know, you're not able to distract yourself, which we, you know, the rat race up until 2019 was very much a distraction of life and doing yeah. things and getting on with things. But then having all this extra time, all you're faced with is yourself. And yeah. you can ignore it for so long, but ultimately it was such a long time that you had to face it. And the first lockdown in the UK, you know, I panicked and then tried to do so much stuff. And I think other people's experience was, oh, this is great, I've got all this extra time. But then almost we, you know, having going into a second lockdown, which is over winter, and the novelty of not, it was a novelty, but as such, but it was something we hadn't experienced before on the first one, where this was the cold reality of it. And I know a lot of people got very down and very depressed. And I think, you know, I did, because you couldn't, it was like, we're back here again. And how long is this going to go on for? And what have I got left? And who am I now? If I haven't got these things, who am I now? Which is really interesting.
Which is a huge question to ask. And it's an important one to ask, I think. But it's crazy that we don't ask it. But yeah. I think it forced almost a lot of people to ask those things. And yeah, for me personally, I, in that second one where people in London were really finding it hard, that was the moment where I, just before I left to Amsterdam, and then I never left. So I'm really grateful for that. I came and I I got the input of a new language, and my girlfriend's Dutch, so I got my right to stay here, and it felt like a new chapter, a new beginning. And I started connecting over here with the writing scene and the publishers here, and it was a whole new world, and getting into writing with DJs as well. So I started writing for other artists, which is an amazing experience. So, but yeah, it's, I know I heard that. I heard when I came back and I talked to people in London, the stories I heard were really, really mad actually. Like I remember one guy, one of my neighbors just saying, he's like, man, I imagined I was in prison break every day, and I just got out of bed in my gym shorts, and I just work out real hard. Like 2.5 hours for no reason. And then I just go back inside my own house. I was like, whoa. Yeah, it really stretched people. And I
also in a really weird way as well. It's like
really weird.
Yeah. That's really inspiring and it's very true as well, and a very human experience, I think, for a lot of people. And I know everybody's experience is actually quite different during that time, because it was something that we've never been through before. And I'm very trying in all of us, particularly creatives as well, I think. Because we, in a way, and I think this is true from what you're saying. So songwriters, we're always trying to work out where we are in the world and who we are and how we fit in and how things are fitting together to almost translate it into songs, isn't it, really? And going through something like that, we did, a lot of songwriters are particularly questioning a lot of things, because you're trying to make sense of things to go, right, okay, well, what's going on now, and how does this make me feel, and what, how am I interpreting this in terms of my music and everything? Do you agree with that from your perspective then? Is that very much your approach as well, about like what you said about trying to help people, but observing what's going on and mixing things up, is that very much how you're feeding your own creativity in your music?
Yeah, definitely. I'm always trying to look around, and I think you're always trying to convey the truth as best you can. And I like to simplify it as well. I love lyrics. I know a lot of people don't listen to them. They just hear the song, but I think they have such a power. Words have such a power to heal. By saying something over and over again, you start to believe it. And that's not just on a spiritual sense of a positive affirmation, but on a scientific basis, the mind is programmed by repetition. And if you say enough times, I'm good, I'm kind, I'm happy, these kind of things, you can change your life. I think you can shape your life in a way that you want it to be. And I think that's incredible. And songs have the power to do that, even if people don't know they're doing it. That's why I think as songwriters, it's really important to be putting out stuff that's healthy and that helps. And of course, you need to express all sides of life. But I think I try to stay away from doing it too much about things that I don't believe in.
I love that. So your new EP, the latest single that you've got out, we're on 1st November 2022. Do you want to give the name of your latest single from the EP?
Yeah, the latest one is Tidal Wave.
When did that come out?
That is out. That came out last Friday.
Right.
What are we now? Tuesday? Yeah. Yeah, so that came out Friday. And it's, in short, it's about acceptance in difficult times. Tidal Wave represents difficulty approaching, and it's kind of unescapable. We experience loss, we experience pain, hardship in our life. Everyone will. That's experience. That's the nature of existence. We have to have that, to have the good stuff. And I think it's about looking at that and seeing, okay, how am I going to hold space for this experience? what am I going to do so that it's registered on the sort of line of my life as something that's I can deal with. And by the middle eight of Tidal Wave, it says, take me back in, take me back out. Yes, I'm ready for your love. Take me back in, take me back out, and the sun will shine again. And that's the hopeful middle eight for me, which is that, yes, of course, in the middle of difficulty, you think it'll never end, but it will. Everything ends, or everything changes. And so it's about giving that feeling of hope of like, however hard things are at the moment, there's a glimmer of light, I promise. And yeah, I love that about the record. And I really believe in this track. I think it has a kind of, a lot of the EP has a lot of water theme to it as well. I feel like the way that the chords, the sort of arpeggios of the piano, they feel like water. And I feel that that kind of represents that things change and they keep moving. To make in your life, don't you know that I love you?
And is that the whole EP out? That single's from, or is there more songs to come from it?
So yeah, so there's been four singles, Run, which had a great music video, check it out if you haven't, YouTube, Waiting for Smith. And then it had Save Me, which is kind of a gospel-y one, which I really like as well. And then Scarlet Dawn, which had a great music video. Also check that out on YouTube. Really proud of that one. It's about love, really, Scarlet Dawn, about the push and pull of love. In this case, it's two women in love. And I think it's a heartbreaking film. I'm super proud of the team that helped me do it. So really, really great. And Tidal Wave is the last single. So that was just out this Friday. Then the EP is out 25th of November, called Trying Not to Try. That's the focus track. And that's kind of upbeat, and that opens the EP. And there's one other one on it called Heal, which will be in the EP as well. And there'll be another music video to come with a week after the EP. And if you want to get a ticket to see me live and not talk and just like do what I'm actually good at, play some songs, then come listen with my full band, these seven of us. And we're playing at the Waiting Room. So it's Waiting for Smith. At the Waiting Room, which I think is quite funny in some weird way.
And
that's in London, 24th. And you can get tickets on We Got Tickets. Links in my bio on Instagram.
I'll put the links in as well on the social media posts when this podcast goes out as well. And that's the, what's the 24th? Did you say that's the show?
That's 24th, yeah, of November. The night before the EP releases.
Amazing. We didn't really get into, we've chatted so much about your songwriting and your story. We didn't really get into much about your story around your live shows and your live performances. I know you say you're working with a full live band now. You've got a show on the 24th of November. What is it? So what's the plan for your live show next year, as well as your plan for 2023?
I mean, the live show, if you come down, will be, so there's two gospel singers. I play keys and acoustic guitar. We have drummer, bassist, someone on SPDs, so we can do triggers and sort of soundscapey stuff. And then everyone can sing. So we have lots of layers of harmony, which I love. And that's kind of the setup. And I want to make the EP launch show not just simulating for the ears, but also for the eyes. So There'll be one music video premiere on the night, and we'll play live to the video. And also there'll be a few extra surprises that will bring you a different sensory input. And they're all kind of suggestions or ideas of how to heal and how to help yourself, which I quite like. And going forward from that, I would love to get a tour together. I've done last year, I did, or this year, I did a tour of Europe, and I did one, a small run in America last year, which is really cool. But yeah, I'd love to just like get on the road and spread the message through live. Cause I think it's my strength is when I perform live. That's where I'm really, that's where I'm my most comfortable. So yeah, that's kind of the rough plan.
We haven't really talked about it much, but have you always performed live? I know obviously you've done a lot in the songwriting sense, but been performing as a solo artist from a young age or not? Or is that something that came to you after you created your music?
I know I always liked performing, even right. as a kid. Like, I actually started really like kind of comedy or making people laugh, like because my dad's in that. And so I was around a lot of comedians and comics. So laughter was like really the currency to be heard and to like be one of the gang. So I think that was, yeah, the where I started performing and kind of acting and stuff like that. And then music came a little bit later. But I like entertaining. I like, it's just another way of making people feel good. And that's nice to see when someone like lights up and they feel like happier or they feel anything. It's like an exciting thing to witness.
I love that. And I also think it's really inspiring as well around how you're putting your live show together, what you're saying there, because you're almost creating an experience through the music and what you're saying about using the visuals and everything as well.
Yeah, totally. I just want to entertain and people to be lost and like feel like they come out and go like, whoa, life, what the hell is this? That would be great. If one person said that, if they walked out and actually said, oh, life, what the hell is this? I'd be like, yes, done it. Completed my goal.
You need to put that on the tour poster.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the bottom line. Then everybody will say it.
Yeah.
Amazing. I want to just say thank you. We've not actually spoken on that before, and it's been a really, really lovely chat speaking to you and hearing your story and what inspires you around your music. I absolutely love your new EP, I thought, and all your music and your songwriting. I've been really impressed by it. And I can see as well, I'm not the only one. You've had some great reviews. You've been picked up in a lot of playlists and press and all sorts of things. And I know you've also got sync placement on like Netflix shows and all sorts as well. So you really have achieved an awful lot since that time of been stuck in a bed for a year. Only a few years
ago.
Thank
you for saying that. Thank you, Kaz. It's really sweet of you to say. I really appreciate it.
And I'm really excited to hear what's next for you. If I can make it down the 25th, I'm going to try and make it down because I'm quite excited to see what you're doing. If not, I'll be see one of your new shows next
year. I love that. I'll put you on a guest list.
Oh, thank you.
I'm as a guest.
I would like people to find your music. I'd like people to find you on social media. So where can they find you? What do they search for?
So just at Waiting for Smith everywhere, on every platform. It's just, I was lucky no one else had thought of that idea before, so that was it.
Maybe that's why your drummer didn't turn up, just so you could have that name. It's a great name.
I feel grateful for him, honestly.
Is he okay? I mean, are you in contact?
Oh yeah, he's fine. He's totally cool. We check.
Or are you still waiting for him to turn up?
Yeah. And we check him once in a while. He knows, and there's this like look, like, hey, I know you've named like your whole life after my dad didn't show up a few times. Like, yeah, that's cool, but that's kind of life, isn't it? It's like a big old joke, right? Come on. It's all good, baby.
As long as he's all right and he hasn't actually turned up since and he's not like something.
No, he's well. I think he's doing really well, actually. I think he's gone into something different. He's still in music somewhere, I'm sure.
Oh, cool. Brilliant. Okay, so I'll put the links as well on the social media posts and underneath in the bio when this podcast goes out, which hopefully will be soon. And I just want to say thank you so much again for talking to us. And it's really, really lovely to meet you.
Thanks for your questions. Thanks for your time. It was a real pleasure, Cass.
No worries. Speak to you soon. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Live Now Play Later podcast. If you're new to Waiting for Smith's music, we have shared Harry's music links and social media in the podcast bio. So you can listen to the latest single from the EP and find links to Waiting for Smith's EP launch show in London on the 24th of November. Supporting new and independent artists and bands by buying their music, seeing them live, and following them on social media channels can really help artists fund and take their music to new levels. So if you've loved hearing Harry's story and music, please do take the time to follow Waiting for Smith on social media and let him know. The Live Now Play Later podcast is fully self-funded. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on your chosen podcast platform so you don't miss future episodes. And if you'd like to, you can send a donation through the Buy a Coffee link in the bio. Any cups of coffee donations are massively appreciated. I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. We'll be back with a new episode soon.